You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to the Cosmic Pizza Podcast, the show of all sorts that sorts all by serving up a slice of life. What is your order? Ah, I see. The special it is. We'll be there to deliver ASAP. Cosmic Pizza Podcast Special Delivery.
First of all, Happy New Year. And I hope Christmas was really good and kind to you. And I hope that 2022 will be a much better year than 2021 and even 2020. In the meantime, here is part two of our Comedians episode. Hopefully this should cheer you up and start off the new year in the right direction. Enjoy the episode, and over to Sean to tell us a joke.
Did you hear the one about the little stand of trees growing in the forest?
No, I did not.
Okay, well, let me set the scene for you. There's two trees. There's a beech tree and a birch tree, and they're just standing close to each other, and there's a little sapling in the middle of them. So the birch tree says to the beech tree, "Do you think that little sapling's a son of a beech or a son of a birch?" And the birch tree says, "Well, I'm pretty sure it's a son of a birch." And the beech tree is, "Well, it kind of looks like me, so it could be a son of a beech." And they argue back and forth for a while, and they're like, "We're never going to settle this." So there's a woodpecker flying by, and the beech tree says, "Hey, Mr. Woodpecker, can you settle a debate for us?" And the woodpecker says, "Sure. What's the problem, boys?" And so the birch tree says, "Well, I think that little sapling there is a son of a birch." And the beech tree says, "No, I'm pretty sure it's a son of a beech." And so the woodpecker says, "Well, I'll handle this." So the woodpecker flies down and starts pecking at the little sapling. It's like, and he pecks away, and he's just going right at it. And finally, the beech tree can't stand it anymore. "Mr. Woodpecker, is it a son of a beech or a son of a birch?" And the woodpecker says, "Sorry, boys, that's the best piece of ash I've ever had." Another one of the groaners that I just have in my back catalog.
Very good. Love that one. I'm going to remember that one. That's going to come out this Christmas.
Nobody ever laughs at that one either. Maybe I'm just not funny. I don't know what it is, but it's one of my favorites.
I love a good setup. I love any kind of routine where it's just a whole setup, and all it is for a one punchline at the very end.
Exactly. That's brilliant. That's what it's all about.
You see, that's Bob Bunkhouse's sort of wheelhouse, really, isn't it? I mean, just setting up a story that in no way is true, but is purely there so he can set up one punchline at the very end of the act.
I've seen Bob Monkhouse. I've seen. I had a video of his of a live act, and he was a lot more dirtier and smuttier when he's live. But he was always a true gentleman. Always dressed in a three-piece suit on TV or on stage. And the show that he did was in front of a live audience, and he starts telling this joke, and then halfway through, one of the topless Page Three models comes on. And she's got her boobs out. She's going round him. And he's still telling this joke. And the crowd are going, because it's all like a gentleman's club. So they're all the men. They go, and all, you know, it's obviously all done in the 70s, 80s. And then she runs off. And then he does the punchline. And then says, "It never does get much of a laugh, that joke." And says, "I don't know why." And it, like, the whole thing was just to get some woman with boobs on. You know? And he's just straight playing it straight to the audience as though nothing's going on. Mm-hmm. It's just like that's like 2 or 3 minutes worth of naked woman running around the stage, and just for that joke. But Bob Monkhouse used to have a joke for everybody's name. So when he was, because he used to do a lot of game shows. So he became like the game show king. So when he was introducing the contestant, they were saying, "What's your name?" John, oh, right. And then he'd tell a joke about a John, or tell a joke about a Chris or a Jane, or whoever it was. which was an incredible thing. But he wrote down every joke that he could remember and every joke that he would come up with, any little funny line or one-liners or jokes. And he had them in two or three volumes of leather-bound books, all handwritten, all notes that he'd made himself. And he'd take them to every gig that he would go to so they would have them fresh and he could think of, you know, any material he could go through or find people's names. And two of them were stolen from his house and they went missing for 18 months. He offered £15,000 return. This was back in the early 80s for them to be returned. Apparently they were returned and the guy who stole them was arrested but wasn't charged. Don't know why, but he got his books back. But he was also a collector of, when he got it, he had a video recorder, one of the very earliest video recorders, and he recorded a lot of stuff off the TV. Old shows, old comedy shows, old TV shows, black and white stuff that, you know, he wanted to collect. And he had thousands of videotapes of all of these shows. When he died, they went through all of his stuff and they found a lot of lost TV shows that they didn't, the BBC didn't realize they'd lost. And they found them again on his in his collection. So they managed to get them and have restored them and put them back into the archives. So they've got them again, because theoretically he was going to get prosecuted for videoing off the TV and videoing copyrighted material off the TV, which everybody does.
Yeah.
Nobody gets arrested for, but right. He was going to get done for it because he had so much of it. And it was all purely for his own pleasure. He had his own little TV studio type, little like video cinema in his house. And he would watch all the old stuff that, you know, all the old comedians that you don't see on the TV anymore. But he agreed that don't prosecute me and you can have it all when I've gone.
And I guess just to wrap up, I've got to talk about the comedian / singer that I introduced you guys to a number of weeks back when we first came up with this topic, a Canadian guy from Montreal named Jean Lajoie. And I don't know how I discovered him, probably about 10 years ago or so. And he's a singer and an actor and all that kind of stuff. But the one song in particular, and he's all over YouTube, Jean Lajoie, that's J-O-N, and then his last name is L-A-J-O-I-E, everyday normal guy, where he just sings about being an everyday normal guy, but he swears incessantly throughout the thing. And you guys explain it to the audience, because you just discovered him, so it'll be easier for you.
So at the end of every line, he uses the word that
Samuel Jackson's famous for.
Samuel L. Jackson is famous for, right? Yes. Mother, whatever.
Mother lover.
Yeah, that's one.
There you go.
So, which we're not going to say, but anyway, and I'm not even going to bother bleeping out because it's just, I don't want to go through having to edit the thing and bleep everything out. If you took those words off at the end, that song would go viral immediately with everybody because it relates to every normal guy.
Yes, yes. I'm just an everyday normal guy. I've got $600 in the bank, mother lover. I have an average job. I'm a customer phone representative. I make $12 an hour. You know, just funny. Yeah. The way he sings it and the way he tells the story of the thing, it's hilarious.
It is hilarious. When you really sent me the link and I watched it, I was in tears. I was crying. It was so funny. And because he's using the swear word at the end, obviously, because he wants to be an edgy rapper type, you know, this type of thing, which makes it even funnier because he's not. He's just being an everyday normal guy. You know, it really is. I'll put the link in the show notes as well. I advise people to go and watch it, but obviously be warned, it is very bad language and a lot of it. But it's in no way offensive in that respect. It is purely about this guy who's just normal guy, but he's trying to make himself sound edgy at the same time. That is so funny.
And my sexual performances are average.
Yes. Oh, sorry, we're talking about the song again. Yes, yes, that's right.
Yeah. I see what you did there.
So, Dan, do you have like a number one top favorite of all time?
There is my top three. I will say, along those same lines as the performer, the YouTuber, there's Tom Stade, who is another comedian from Canada who has emigrated over here and became famous because of the Edinburgh Fringe. But he has this fantastic bit of setup that my wife and I are always talking about. It's the first time he encountered a meat market here in the UK. And it was a man selling meat out of the back of a van. And it's about 20 minutes of him talking about how Brits love things that are cheap and nasty. And he talks about, you know, I've got a rump roast. Do you know what I'm going to do with this rump roast? I'm going to put it on the scale. And he's like talking about this awe that the entire crowd are getting worked up because he's putting a piece of meat on a scale. And he puts some more meat on there. Do you know what I'm going to do with this? And he holds up a bag, a plastic bag full of what looks like meatballs, large meatballs. I've got a bag of faggots. And this American Canadian comedian who's just flabbergasted by what's going on says, I don't know what you do over in this country, but where I come from, you cannot say you have a bag of faggots. You certainly cannot have a whole bag of faggots. And just that line creased us up every time we hear it. It's always on repeat over here on the Dave channel, which is the comedy channel over here in the UK. When he did a live at the Apollo, he did that stand-up. The meat van guy or the meat van man stand-up piece. Fantastic. But because he uses the word faggot, which it describes a meatball over here in the UK, we are not using it as a derogatory term. But again, it's using that word inoffensively to make a joke. And it is just absolutely fantastic and well worth a go. But for me, there is a top three comedians. I'll just say the names because most people seem to know them. The one people probably won't know overseas is Stuart Lee, who technically is probably one of the greatest stand-up comedians going. He will break down a joke and how it works and how it is funny, word for word. If you place a word next to another word, that is funny. He technically breaks down a word. When he actually takes the joke, it isn't funny. If you wrote it down on a piece of funny, on a piece of paper, it would not get a laugh. But the way he says it, and he says it in the intonation, and the way he repeats every single word will get a laugh. And it's how he says it. It's not what he's saying. It's very funny. So Stuart Lee, if you haven't heard of him, definitely check him out. He's fantastic. Technically one of the funniest comedians who has ever lived because he just knows how the craft works. The other two, these are names everyone's going to know. Eddie Izzard. She is still the funniest person for, outlandish, off the cuff, weird, random, non sequitur comedy, but probably most famous for Cake or Death or the Darth Vader sequence in the canteen on the Death Star. Are you Mr. Stevens wanting to get an extra lump of peas and carrots on his lunch order?
You'll need a tray.
You'll need a tray.
I am Darth Vader, Lord Vader. I am Lord of the Sith. I do not need a tray.
You'll need a tray to put your food on. Oh, I need a tray.
Oh, I need a tray. Okay.
Oh, this tray is wet. Do you dry these trays in the rainforest?
I need to see your supervisor.
Mr. Stevens. It's just, I showed that to my boys and we quote it endlessly all the time. And there's a guy at work I couldn't believe when I found out his surname was Stevens. I thought, oh my God, it's Mr. Stevens.
It's Mr. Stevens. That is the one. I think whenever I go to a party and I hear something and someone's being a bit like that, they're being a bit above themselves. They've been given a little bit of power and they want to hold it over someone and said, oh, look, it's Mr. Stevens. Yeah. And it never gets a laugh. That is one of the things that lives in my head rent free and never gets a laugh because nobody knows the reference. But yeah, anytime I can sort of quote a Mr. Stevens, it's always good.
Yeah. My son was making dinner the other night and he got some onion rings out and I said, you'll need a tray. we both burst out laughing.
It all links into Monty Python and that kind of humor and the silliness for silliness's sake. It just everything else he's done, he's probably now more famous as an actor as well as a comedian, or she is now. Just Eddie Izzard is the top for me. But there's one comedian who not everyone's heard of, but is very famous in the comedian circles, and that is Bill Hicks for me. Bill Hicks is a comedian who sadly died in the early 90s due to pancreatic cancer. But his comedy tone was highly political and was always focused on the political sides of the day, but was always a commentary and an attempt to try and make a philosophy out of stand-up comedy. And his biggest thing was always how he ended his act. He was always saying that, if there's a point to my comedy, it's that, this is all just a ride. The world is just an amusement park, and this is a thrill ride. It has ups and downs. It's very loud. It's very bright. It's very colorful. We always need to know that whatever's going on in the world, that there is a brighter side to it, and we can always work together and laugh together. And he was always about taking comedy, seriously looking at the problems of the day, and then trying to make a positive message out of it at the end. And Bill Hicks is one of those ones I will always quote and always go with. And there's so many bits of stand-up. One of my best friends, I was trying to figure out what's the best bit of stand-up from Bill Hicks, and we just couldn't narrow it down. There's at least 10 or a dozen of his pieces that just stand out. But if there's one that I'm going to get you to edit in, Paul, it's definitely his leaving message, the life is just a ride at an amusement park, because it is just the best sign off for any stand-up comedy I've ever heard. So those are my top three.
Fair enough. Before we get into my top three, I think we need to take another break, maybe throw in another advert, just in case, another promo for another ESO Network show.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
So, another great promo.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely listen to that show.
Definitely, for sure.
First thing
great,
day.
Great show. That reminds me of the time that I went to the store the other week, and I was buying a poster to hang up in my bedroom wall, and I get to the checkout counter, and the cashier is looking exhausted, and she's like, TGIF. And I just look at her and I say, SHIT. And she's like, no, you know, TGIF, thank goodness it's Friday. And I looked at her and I said, no, SHIT, sorry, honey, it's Thursday. But the laughs didn't stop there. So I'm like, there wasn't the price on this poster anyway. How much is this thing? And she says, it's $6.99 plus tax. And I said, I don't need any tax. I'm going to hang it up with tape.
Oh, you know, I tell you what, Sean, I went to a restaurant the other day, and I ordered some chicken soup. I had to call the waiter over. I said, there's no chicken in this chicken soup. And he said, well, there's no horse in the horseradish either.
That's like I was going to buy a wood stove the other day. And so I'm looking at all these wood stoves, and I'm like, these aren't wood stoves. They're all made out of metal.
So I went back to the restaurant last week, and I said, can I have a spaghetti? He said, yeah. I said, well, how long will my spaghetti be? And he said, I don't know. We never measure it. But my wife, she's got a bad habit of biting her nails, but I've cured her. I hid her teeth. Although, having said, my uncle was a great conductor. Yeah, he was struck by lightning. All those are Tommy Cooper jokes.
I thought so. what we would call groaners.
Yeah. So my top comedian of all time. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go through a list of honorable mentions, some of which we've already spoken about. The first one I'll go through is Mike Harding. Mike Harding was a folk singer with funny anecdotes, a bit similar to Jasper Carrot, and my all-time top favorite comedian. And again, his anecdotes got longer and longer between the songs. And he produced an album in the early 80s called the Red Specs album. And he put all of his funny anecdotes onto this album. Oh my goodness. I found it on YouTube a while back, and it's still funny then, because I still tell these jokes now. And I some of them are long, it was a long routine, one especially about Christmas. You should really listen to it. There's another one about, he does a lot about Americans as well, because I think at the time he was just going over to America and he was picking up some funny stories over there. the difference in language and the different words that we use, as Sean was mentioning before. Well, one of his anecdotes was when he was walking through a little village and this big load of big coach turns up and all these Americans get out and start taking pictures and photographs and things. And they spot this little guy and he's got this little table in front of his house and he's just like got this big lump of brown material and he keeps pulling a piece off and he's rolling it into a little ball and putting it in, onto a pile. And he's slowly but surely this pile of these little brown balls are getting bigger and bigger. And he's pulled another piece off and he rolled it up and he put it into a little bowl and put it next to the next one. So this American, big American guy from Texas walks over and he's got the old Stetson hat, you know, and he goes over and he says, hey boy, he says, what you got there? He says, the learning pills.
What the hell are these goddamn learning pills? They make you right clever, these learning pills. Right clever, huh? How many of those goddamn learning pills would I need to be right clever? About 50, you. 50, huh? All right. Okay, how much are those goddamn things? £10 each. £10 each, that's £500. Jeez, that's £1,000. All right, but they make you right clever, these learning pills. So I give him £1,000. And he says, what do I do with these goddamn things? Only little, just in his hand. He said, what do I do with these goddamn learning pills? He said, you put them all in your mouth. He said, you chew them up and you swallow them. So he put them all in his mouth, chewing them up. And, He said, that's sheep shit. He said, you're learning.
Mike Hardy. So then we've got Stephen Wright, an American comedian. I don't know whether you guys heard of Stephen Wright. Deadpan, master of sarcasm, you know, real sort of, oh, so dry. I've never seen anybody so dry as him. Never, you know, not a smile on his face, but my goodness, some of the jokes he would tell. He said, if you first you don't succeed, then skydiving is not for you. He says, I intended to live forever. So far, so good. And if you think nobody cares about you, try missing a couple of payments.
I took a lie detector test. No, I didn't. I remember when I was 7, my grandmother said, Stephen, come over here. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you know, you're over there. Now come over here. I said, all right. And then she said, here's $10, and don't tell your mother that I'm giving this to you. And I said, it'll cost you more than that.
And along those lines, again, 1990s to sort of modern day, Jack D over here is a London comedian. Again, very sarcastic, a lot of irony, deadpan. Never laughs at his jokes, made a big living out of that, went on to Celebrity Big Brother and won that, actually escaped from the house at one point. They had to drag him back in. Did a lot on panel shows, but he's now, I haven't seen him recently, actually. I think he's seen, he seems to have disappeared. I mean, he's probably just concentrating on his stage, I would assume. Going into female comedians, which we haven't really had too many of, Catherine Ryan, another Canadian. Mm-hmm. She's based over here now. She's married a guy over here, and she uses like a contrast between a sweet personality and irreverent in-your-face material. So she's very strong character, but really has really really good material as well, which I do like. And she's got she physically as well. She's quite a physicality to her performance, which can be amazing. Sarah Millican, who's a girl from Newcastle, brilliant, brilliant comedian, the best newcomer at the Edinburgh Fringe in 2008. She comes on as a sort of like a rather sort of jittery sort of meek sort of person. But, you know, she's it's very self-depreciating as well, but she's very good at observational stuff. The Geordie accent, you know, it helps as well.
There are so many insults on bottles of shampoo these days. So many personal questions. Are you dry? Things are still going very well, but I'm not sure why it's relevant. Thanks for asking. Are you greasy? I've probably just had chips, so yes. Are you difficult to manage? Absolutely I am. The woman who worked in the shop kind of sidled up to me, and I thought, this is why I don't normally go in posh shops like this, because now I've got to have a conversation. They don't talk to you in Superdrug unless you're trying to nick stuff. Just so you know. She sidled up to me and she said, what do you struggle with? And looking back, I think she meant me hair. But I just went, anxiety, me weight, and today, thrush.
Yeah, she's married to Gary Delaney, who's another guy who does one-liners. He's a little bit more risque with his one-liners, though. Or she was married to him. I think she may well get divorced. I can't remember.
She did get divorced, yeah. And that leads to one of her best stand-ups, where she talks about her cake shelf, her tummy that is now solid, so she can leave it as her cake shelf, so she can sit and eat cakes whenever she wants.
Yeah, that's right. She was a sort of slightly overweight, should we say, when she started. She did lose a bit of weight, but I think she was always on about eating chocolate cakes and things. That's Frankie Boyle, who I have seen, very funny but very crude, especially very live. He was getting very close to the mark on TV, and I think it sort of put a lot of people off him, so they moved away from him. And he did come back a little bit, but I think on stage he'll tell the jokes that we would tell amongst ourselves, not necessarily on the TV. So when my wife saw him, she was, oh, I didn't think he was like that. Going to be like that. I said, what do you expect? He was getting really close to that on the TV. You know, one of the funniest men. And again, this will allude to, again, to my favorite comedian and why I like them. One of the most funniest men that I have ever seen. I'd love to see him live on stage, but on any panel show, I've seen a couple of his live at the Apollos, Ross Noble, who is how do you even describe him? The notes in his Wikipedia page say, his stand-up routine is largely improvised and surreal performance with a stream of consciousness delivery. He's often referred to as a randomist. A large percentage of his set becomes based around heckles and conversations with members of the audience. Although he does often have a few set topics which he performs, but he describes the entire show as about four words on a piece of paper, and the rest of it is improvised.
This is the thing that used to strike fear into my heart in a relationship. It would always happen, right? When you're there and you'd hear, what are you thinking? now that's a bad thing to ask me at any given time, do you know what I mean? Because there's probably quite a lot of odd stuff knocking around in there. Do you know what I mean? I always wanted to turn around and just go, you know, be all kind of romantic and Byron-esque about it, you know, and just go, what was I thinking, my dear? I was merely thinking how the splendour of the day was counted only by the radiance of your beauty. But I always panic at that moment, and I'd sort of freak out a bit and not get it right in my head, and I'd be like, and I'd be standing there like trying to remember like that, and they'd say, what are you thinking? And I'd go, do you think ghosts change their clothes?
His mind goes to places that you wouldn't even believe existed. And if you got, you put him into, obviously I've heard him on The Infinite Monkey Cage. He's been on there a few times on that podcast. You know, it's a sort of semi-serious comedy sort of science thing. And but he's very intelligent. I mean, the questions that he asks and the things he asks are really, really thick. But the trouble is, as soon as he opens his mouth, everybody's waiting for the, where's this going to go? Where's this going to end up? You know, it's just not going to. And so most of the times he isn't taken too seriously, but. Oh my goodness, what a brain. I'd love to live in his world. It is so surreal. Did you mention Nish Kumar?
Nish Kumar, yeah.
Another very intelligent man who's a political satirist, really. I mean, he likes to sort of take modern problems and issues with the government, and he'll rip into them. And he had a semi-political sort of comedy show that he had on TV. He also, it was on the radio, and then he'll be put onto TV. But he stopped doing that now. I think he's having a few issues, personal issues, which he needs to sort of sort out. So he's gone off the stage a bit. But again, he was always incredible. Russell Howard, we've been to see him a couple of times. He's hilarious. He's from the West Country. So from, you know, my wife likes him because he's from Bristol area. Tells a lot of jokes about his sister and his family and all that. I think it's really good stuff.
Dads. I can't wait to be a dad. Obviously, I'm not ready. I'm still afraid of the dark. I think that's fairly crucial. Dad, can you get my coat? I don't think so, son. It's in the cupboard, and that is where the goblins live. You won't trick me. I'm so wise. Such a child, you know? So, you know that feeling when you're near a wardrobe? There's always part of you going, come on, this time. Narnia. It never happens. But... I bet that's an Arafana MFI. Just no. I'll give anyone in this room 200 quid if they go to IKEA tomorrow dressed as a lion and hide in a cupboard. That's...
One of the funniest slips that he did on stage, he'll swear, not badly, but he'll swear, you know, and using a bit of bad language. And he went to take a drink out of a water bottle and the top sort of fell off as he was about to drink it and it spilt down his front and he goes, oops-a-daisy. And then sort of looked up and went, oh, I'm really this hard cutting-edge comedian and I've just said, oops-a-daisy, not, oh, it's all down the front or whatever, you know. So it's quite revealing that, you know, he's just your normal guy, really. But Peter Kay is, you know, the genius that is the 21st century's best comedian in the UK, certainly.
Garlic and bread.
Cheesecake. So again, observational stuff about, you know, when he was a youngster with his family, and you know his nan is, you know, like is his biggest fan, and you know, she's the stories that he comes up from her. You can't really say too much about Peter Kay because he's just a phenomenal tour de force. Very physical comedy, even though he's quite a large guy. Yeah, amazing.
Character comedy as well. Just the Phoenix Nights that he did on Channel 4, where it was all the characters that he played from all of the really run-down men's working clubs that he'd done all of his stand-up in the early days, and he's playing all the characters. It's just fantastic.
Because you feel guilty about environments. Honest to God, I feel bad. I can't put a can of Coke in bin at home, me now, without getting it out, putting it outside without recycling. I spend my life marching to bloody bin outside with a handful of recycling every bloody day. Got pea juice running down my arms and cans of beans slashing wrists open. Chucking in. Back again. Another load. I've just been. Robinson's Cordial. Lenore. Christ almighty. This is my life. What colour bin's out this week, love? What colour bin's out? Is it green? Is it blue? Is it black, brown, maroon? I just copy old people over at Roadme. Whatever bin they've got out, I copy. Because old people... live for putting their bins out. Honest, all they do. It's the main focus of their entire week. They've got blue out. I'm putting bloody blue out.
Yeah, and the car share as well is a phenomenal piece of writing. You've got two people in a car and you've got a half-hour program just of these two characters in the car. It's just amazing. Peter Kay, incredible writer and comedian. John Bishop, who's a Liverpool comedian, again, observational stuff, talks about his family and the experiences he's been through in the things he's done in his life. He's on to a heck of a lot of sports relief and comic relief, things like swimming the channel and cycling from London to Paris and all this type of thing, purely all for charity. He's raised about 4.2 million in his charity work, but a great comedian.
I just got an iPod. It holds 24,000 songs. I've got 6 CDs. And you just buy stuff, don't you? Like we bought a new fridge. We bought a new fridge, and we had a fridge. There was nothing wrong with the fridge that we had. It just wasn't massive. So my wife wanted a new fridge. She wanted a new silver fridge that's the size of a bungalow. So, so she wanted a new fridge, and because I liked sex, I said, yeah.
You listen to his show. We were lucky enough to get some tickets and go to see him in Liverpool. And he went through the whole routine, telling jokes about his dog, about his sons and his wife and his kids, and all this sort of comedy of things he was doing. And right at the end, he says, thank you very much. And then he stands there, and there's a huge screen above him, which is obviously, you know, shows him. And it shows a montage of all of the people he's been talking about, all of the dogs that he's been telling these jokes about, pictures of the things that have happened to him that he's been telling the jokes about. So it shows that everything he spoke about was basically the truth. He's just embellished it slightly for a comic effect, but it's basically what he was talking about. It's absolutely amazing. And you think, oh my goodness, he really was there. He really was on stage with, you know, U2, I think it was, that he managed to get on stage with in America and all that. You know, it's got photographs of him there. So, but the story of how he gets there and how he got to it was, you know, take a good 10 minutes long, a good 10-minute routine out of it. So, yeah.
Really, and appropriate now for the ESO Network, as he's now the companion for the Doctor.
That's true. That's where you will know him from, Doctor Who companion in the 13th, series 13 of Doctor Who. Anne Lewis, his name is. So, yeah. Which brings me to my number one favourite comedian of all time. Former welder and folk singer. Grew up in the Glasgow area, became a welder in the Glasgow dockyards.
But I was born in Anderson in Glasgow, and it's a, sort of down at the dock side there. And I don't remember it much because we left when I was about 3 or 4, and I was brought up in Partick in Glasgow, where Partick Thistle originally came from, the football team, Partick Thistle FC. I say that because most Englishmen think they're called Partick Thistle Nil, right?
Which instantly, anybody who's, you know, who's worked in the dockyards, who's worked, you know, as a welder, you're there in an industry, you're surrounded by guys who are just constantly cracking jokes, or, you know, there's a lot of banter about, you know, you've got to, you know, become hard-nosed and, you know, windswept and interesting while you're there. Yeah, it's Billy Connolly. Billy Connolly is my favourite all-time comedian.
I was in Los Angeles, and this is the truth. There was a sign, and it said, to the Braille School. I thought, who's it for?
He was great when he was doing the chat shows back in the, you know, the 70s, when he made his name through one particular joke. From there, he just took off. Again, he produced a lot of LPs before video became a thing. I got a load of them. Listen to his jokes, his routines about two Scottish guys going over to Italy to try and meet the Pope, drinking pints of creme de menthe and all that. You know, it's just a funny story. But he is a naturally funny man. You know, if you see him, you know, on stage, when he does his routine, you can tell there's a joke. And then he'll tell another joke, which is actually just a funny story that's happened to him on the way to the theatre type of thing. You know, it's amazing the way that he can just pull it up. You know that he is, the background that he's had, you know, some of the early 1980s material he used was about his growing up in the 70s, about living in the tenements, which are big apartment blocks. And they'd have some drunk guy, you know, wandering down the bottom, singing songs with a cap, you know, holding out a cap, trying to get people to throw money down to him out of the tenements. And so, you know, people would throw, like, you know, a few coins down to him, and, you know, oh, thank you very much, and put them in his hat, and then he, you know, would carry on singing. So what they used to do is he's got a pair of pliers and a penny, and heat it up over a candle, and then he'd throw the penny down to him, and he'd go, oh, thank you very much, and try and pick it up. Oh yeah. So, you know, things like that, which you know are, you know, and another joke he told about what they used to do is, if they were going to demolish one of these big tenement buildings, they would surround it, but they'd take all the doors off, every door, internal door, external doors, take all the doors off, and they'd make a fence out of it around the building so that people couldn't go in and, you know, take stuff or whatever. And he's walking past one of these things one day, and he sees this guy going up, and he's like, he's looking at this door, and he's like, sort of, and he's measuring it. Look, and he's like, oh, okay. Next one, he picks it up and he runs off with this door. Comes back 5 minutes later with another door and puts it in its place. He's obviously looked at this door and thought, well, that's a much better door than my front door. He says, I'm having that. So he's taken that and put it in his front door. He said, the thing was, it had a different number on the door. He said, you can just imagine the postman coming up to the next day, walking up to this door and going, 23? I thought this was 25 yesterday. So it's just things like that that made me laugh.
Television treat you like you're 4 years of age. Now, here's the weather. This is the country where we live. And this is a wee cloud. I really feel brassed off when they do that. They stick clouds and lightning on the board. They don't need to do that. I don't know what a cloud looks like. Just tell me, I'll understand.
And Billy Connolly, he's obviously gone on to do, become an actor and acted with, you know, he's made a great job of it and gone on to some of the big, big films. Sadly, we saw him, I it was one of those things I thought, if he ever comes around to Liverpool, I've got to get a ticket. And eventually we got one. And it was a theoretically restricted view ticket. You know, it was a very cheap ticket. Managed to get one of the last ones going. Although when we got there, we could see him fine. But you could tell when he was telling the jokes, telling the stories, he was a little bit slower than normal. And his style is sort of, he rambles through a story. He goes from A to B via C, D, E, F, and G. And he'll sort of come back to the point and then he'll carry on and then he'll ramble off in a different direction and get back to the point again. But this seemed a little bit more than usual. And it was a few weeks later that he turned out that he released it out to the news out and said, he's got Parkinson's disease. And he was on the Graham Norton show a couple of weeks back and he looked really good. Unfortunately, he couldn't really move much. He was sat in his chair, but his mind was still very much there, which was good to see. Because like I say, when we saw him, we thought, ooh, I wish I'd seen him a couple of years ago rather than now, because you know, it's a bit sad to see him on the stage doing what he likes and doing what he loves and doing it all and telling, you know, getting the crowd right behind him and we were really laughing at it. It was a great night. But you know, ultimately you thought, it's the last time we're going to see him because he's not going to be doing this forever. And he can't stand up on stage for that long and do things. But again, funny, naturally funny guy who has become a comedian.
Sean?
Me.
The top three?
You know, I don't really have any favorites. It's just I like certain ones. But what I did do before we started was I found an article published about 6 days ago from something called yardbarker.com, the 25 greatest stand-up comedians of all time, which I thought I would just read out to you guys. And, of course, none of the people that you mentioned are on there. But, of course. You know, so actually that's not true. I'll just read them. And I guess they got Robin Williams, of course.
Yeah.
Bill Hicks, like you mentioned. Gary Shandling. Phyllis Diller. Tig Notaro. Somebody named Patrice O'Neill, who I haven't heard of. Dick Gregory. Don Rickles. Bob Newhart.
Oh, Bob Newhart, yeah.
Fox.
Sorry, to go back to Bob Newhart, he was great because he used to do one-sided conversations. So he'd be like doing a telephone conversation where he's talking, but he's also feeding you the line that the person is telling you. So in the same way that he's talking. So he would do as though he was a driving instructor. And he's instructing the driver, and so you hear his side of the conversation. He says, "Now take a left here. No, not this left. Not this left. The next left." He said, "Sorry, I didn't mean to sound so nervous." There, story about a bus driver, a guy teaching a bus driver how to drive. He says, "There's an old lady coming up now. She's just about got to the back of the bus. Right now, floor it." So he starts to pull away from the bus. He says, "Wait." He says, "She's running after the bus. That's right. Yeah, no, slow down. Give her some hope." He says, "That's it, yeah."
"All right, you want to get on the bus, Mrs. Selkirk? That's all right. Fumble for your change. All right, now start heading toward the back of the bus. That's it. All right, hit your accelerator. All right, hit the brake. Hit the accelerator again. Now your brake. All right, just see how she spun all the way to the front of the bus that time?"
again, oh, that was, he was a phenomenal act, you know, just doing one-sided conversations all the time. It was great.
That's actually listed in his little one paragraph write-up, the one-sided conversation. So yeah, that's a definite thing. Next on the list, of course, is Red Fox. I don't know if you guys ever watched Sanford and Son, the TV show from the 70s.
Steptoe and Son, as we would know it over here.
Okay, great show. Then we've got Dave Hattell, who Mark Maron always talks about. Mm. We've got Stephen Wright. Mort Stahl, who just actually died not too long ago.
Why do I know that name?
Let's see. Mort Stahl is a legendary political comedian and satirist known for literally taking comedy right from the headlines, as he often had a newspaper with him on stage to mine material. It was a unique style that didn't tell stories and build a routine as much as it dipped from topic to topic, creating a collage. He started comedy in the early 50s. And it said, this article's old, but it says nearly at 92 years old, he still does a weekly show.
Wow.
Next on the list is a controversial one, but Bill Cosby. Then we've got Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Mitch Hedberg. Steve Martin. Joan Rivers.
I have friends, and I'm not going to name names, Goldie Hawn. I have not. They can't take getting older, you know? And she'll say, would you believe I have a grown-up daughter? And you're going to go, yes! No question. It's very hard for a woman to get older.
Yeah.
And older men, because I always faked orgasm, and now these old guys, you know, if you moan and groan in the wrong ear, they don't hear it.
Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, somebody named Moms Mobley, and Lenny Bruce, Eddie Murphy, George Carlin, and Richard Pryor. Mm. Those are the top 25 greatest stand-up comedians as written by this American-centric thing.
Yes. Yeah, they're all world-famous in America.
Yes.
Oh, yes. That's definitely it. I'm Canadian, but I'm right next door, so there you go.
Yeah. Now there's someone, glaring omissions there. Robin Williams, of course, but
But then I always see him more as an actor than a stand-up, even though his stand-up is fantastic.
And he started up as a stand-up. So.
Yes. Yeah. Again, another one with so much energy.
Mm.
And Eddie Murphy was a good stand-up as well. He's got some of his material was hard to get hold of over here when he started out because, of course, like say, videotape wasn't a thing, so you couldn't record it. But when you did get a, you know, managed to get a recording of it or a record or a, you know, somebody eventually would get a videotape, whatever, we got to see it. Some of his routines were absolutely phenomenal.
Mm.
Again, observational stuff, about kids eating ice cream outside the house and things. So.
Yeah, and there's lots of other ones too that aren't on the list or we didn't talk about, like the people from Whose Line Is It Anyway? I don't know if you have that over there.
Yeah.
I actually got to see Colin Mockery a few years ago when he came to town. So
yeah,
nice.
No real favorites, but I just like it in general and enjoy dirty songs, I guess, too.
I think that's a good place to leave it, any.
That's a great place.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then.
The end is always the best place to leave it.
Of course, yes. So our special is gone. And the grease in the box is cold, and we hope you are full to the brim. So join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
We've been your deliverers today. Please leave a tip at the door by subscribing for future deliveries, rate and review our service, and we hope you come back for more helpings next time. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Tumblr, and TikTok by searching for the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. If you would like to send us an MP3 file, you can email us on cosmicpizzapodcast@hotmail.com, and we'll catch you on the next episode of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast.
Mm-mm.
Did you say slices of lice then?
I think I did say slices of lice, yes.
Just say lice. Sure.
Yeah. We do have a safety health and safety rating of 5 here, you know. We have to keep up the good work.
Yeah, there's going to be a hook to pull me off stage now. Right, I'll just try it again. So join us for more slices of life in the next special delivery of the Cosmic Pizza Podcast. There we go.
You do know that's staying in, don't you?
Slices of lice, yes. Slices of lice. Hello.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.